to part two of Macro Business Radio podcast, a discussion with David Llewellyn-Smith and Leith Van Onselen about negative gearing, the Australian economy and reform. After we've been through the impacts on prices and rents, the next bone of contention surrounding negative gearing seems to be on who actually does negatively gear and, more importantly, who actually gets the benefit or the bulk of the benefit out of negative gearing. Leith, can you just take us through who negatively gears and who gets most of the benefit from the revenue side of the budget from negative gearing?
There's a few different data sets that show slightly conflicting news around negative gearing. The one that's been really used by the coalition to a large extent and also the property lobby is the ATO taxation statistics for 2013, financial year 2013, which is the most recently available. Those show that 55% of negatively geared investors earn above the average taxable income and 45% earn below, whereas the actual distribution of negatively geared losses, 61% of those, the distribution of the benefits goes to those earning above average taxable income, whereas 39% goes to those earning below average taxable income. I will add, and this is a very important point, that this data is very unreliable for this type of analysis because it measures what's called taxable income. And taxable income is what's left after deductions like negative gearing. So it's not correct for Treasurer Scott Morrison or the property lobby to say that, oh, look, all these middle income people are using negative gearing because they earn under 80,000, when 80,000 is actually nearly 50% above the average taxable income. So we're not talking about, you know, so-called middle to low income earners here. And also, that 80,000 he quotes, he often uses to justify negative gearing, is taxable income. So it's the amount that's left over after deductions like negative gearing. So people are using negative gearing to reduce their taxable income. Therefore, it's not correct to use taxable income as the right measure. Now, a much better data set comes from the Household Income Labor Dynamics Survey, which the Reserve Bank has done quite a lot of analysis on. And what that shows, and what this survey data shows, is total income, not taxable income. So it measures those who are earning significant actual income, but it might come from superannuation, which isn't taxed, or it includes income before it's been deducted by negative gearing. And what this shows is that 80% of the outstanding mortgage debt is being held by the top 40% of taxpayers. So it's not true, therefore, that negative gearing is used primarily by, you know, lower to middle income earners. It's actually benefits. It's been used by predominantly higher income earners and it is making the tax system less progressive.
And with the bulk of the benefit going to higher income earners, this is actually costing the revenue side of the budget billions of dollars each year.
According to the Grattan Institute, the actual revenue lost, so once you deduct it by the relevant tax rate, is about $2 billion a year has been lost from negative gearing, according to the Grattan Institute's analysis, and then you can add a few more billion from the capital gains tax discount as well. So it is quite costly for the budget, and the lion's share of those benefits are going to the highest income earners, and of course it's making housing less affordable and raising Australia's debt and therefore financial stability risks for no apparent benefit.
Leith, one of the more interesting claims which has been made about the Labor policy is that it would make it more difficult for small business. What are your thoughts on that?
One of the lines of attack that's come out recently from the Turnbull government is that under Labor's proposed curbs on negative gearing, some private businesses will lose their tax perks. So if you're a wage and salary earner, for example, and you have a side business that you're trying to set up, the Turnbull government's tried to argue that you will no longer be able to offset the losses with that startup business against your wages and salary earnings, and that will crimp, you know, new startups, entrepreneurship, etc. Well, it's actually not a very, very good argument for two reasons. Firstly, Labor's negative gearing curbs will only apply to passive investments. So that's when you buy an investment property or shares, and it won't apply to active investments. So ones, for example, where you're creating a business. Secondly, the rules regarding negative gearing aren't consistent anyway with other parts of the tax system. So the classic example is under the ATO's tax rules, someone who operates a side business can only offset against their wage salary earners if they can prove that their business makes a profit in 3 out of 5 years. So there are already curbs on the ability to offset business losses against your wages and salary earnings. and those limits do not apply to property. So we have a ridiculous system whereby someone can own a natively geared property and claim as big losses as they want for as long as they want without any limitation. But if that same person runs a side business, there are limits. There are also other quirks in the tax system whereby if, for example, you want to invest in some education for yourself, there are limits to how much of those education expenses you can offset against your wages and salaries. And the coalition government is also looking to limit the amount of work-related deductions that you can make. So there are limits all over the board that apply to everything except for investment property.
One of the other risks you have referred to in the past is that with the bulk of Australia's investment property owners and therefore negative gearers of real estate getting on in years, and with negative gearing only really a viable strategy while you have income to write off losses against, there is a risk of large numbers of investment property owners potentially looking to sell at about the same time as they approach the pension.
Yeah, well, a bit of a hypothesis, and it's sort of based on, I guess, logic, in that negative gearing is only a benefit where you have a tax rate to offset your losses with and you can claim tax benefits. But once someone moves into the retirement phase and they're no longer earning taxable income, well, the whole rationale for negative gearing dissipates. Now, I think at the moment we haven't seen a big flight to the exits, but there is a risk that as the baby boomers who own most of the negatively geared stock increasingly start to retire over the next decade or so, that you could potentially see some divestment of investment property for tax reasons because the tax benefit's no longer there, and that could exacerbate any downswing in house prices. But we're not there yet, and we haven't seen those influences yet. If anything, over the past 3 years, we've seen a massive ramp up in investor lending and investor speculation. The Australian Bureau of Statistics does do semi-annual data releases on income and wealth. The most recent one is, again, a few years old, but it did show that the lion's share of property investors are the baby boomers. And I can only presume that that's roughly the same now. Maybe it's tilted a little bit more towards Gen X, but assuming the situation hasn't changed materially, it's the baby boomers who own the lion's share of the investment properties and own occupied property, I should say, too. So, yeah, we're not there yet, but that is a risk going forward.
So, Leith, just touching on that point, if the last data we have for the number of users of negative gearing is a couple of years old, and we know that there's been a massive ramp up in the number of people negatively gearing over the last couple of years, on the back of a surge in investment property buyers, would we be expecting the cost to the budget to increase considerably moving forward?
Yeah, I think so, purely because we've had this big ramp up. As of 2013, there were 1.3 million negatively geared investors and about 2 million total investors. So 1.3 million were negatively geared, 700,000 roughly were positively geared. But with the huge surge in investor lending over the past few years and the fact that prices have risen so much, particularly in Melbourne and Sydney, and also rental yields have fallen so much, we could potentially have seen the number of negatively geared investors rise quite dramatically. Offsetting that, of course, is the fact that mortgage rates have fallen since financial year 2013. So it is quite hard to estimate what the exact numbers will be when the tax stats for 2014-15 come out in about a year's time. But I'm expecting the number of negatively geared investors, the total amount of losses and the cost of the budget to have increased.
In the Fairfax Press this week, we've seen Peter Martin writing about how Australia's become a nation less focused on creating a home-owning society, but more focused on individuals having the right to, inverted commas, get ahead. He's noted that access to house ownership has played a key part in that change to a more selfish society, and he's also noticed that those focusing on getting ahead are generally focused on older and wealthier Australians simply getting ahead of younger and poorer Australians who will inherit a far more exposed economy and financial system.
Yeah, certainly. Well, the home ownership rate has been falling for decades, but it's fallen particularly hard for the younger age groups. And the reason for that's obvious. We've had a massive increase in the cost of property in Australia. So it's a lot more difficult to obviously get on the housing ladder. And at the same time, we've had a situation, at least over the recent years, whereby younger workers in particular have had a big increase in youth unemployment, but also aren't getting the pay rises that they used to. So it's making it even harder again. But it is quite interesting that the Treasurer, Scott Morrison, keeps talking about how negatively geared mums and dads are just trying to get ahead. They're using negative gearing to try and improve their own circumstances, get ahead for retirement, etc. But what's lost in this is that them trying to get ahead is raising the cost of housing and means that those who aren't negatively geared and trying to break into the housing market are falling behind. So what Scott Morrison is effectively promoting is a speculative housing market instead of just trying to encourage home ownership, and instead of just trying to get as many people as homeowners as possible, he's encouraging this sort of bigger thy neighbour approach. Old people getting ahead of young people, and those who are willing to take on, you know, speculate getting ahead of those who just want to buy a home to live in.
And effectively that defaults in favour of those who are in a position to speculate, who are generally older and already have assets.
That's right, because it's obviously a lot easier to negatively gear a property when you have an existing home equity to leverage against. For example, if you're a young person who didn't own a home and you want to negatively gear a property, it might make it a little bit easier to get in the housing market because you can claim your interest is tax deductible, but you still have to come up with a deposit. Whereas if you're an older person who already has a home with substantial equity, you can effectively borrow 100% because you use the equity in your principal place of residence as the deposit. So the whole system really is geared towards those who already have assets who tend to be older people.
From there, let's move on to banks. They, of course, are key players in the entire real estate financial system. They're backing investors in the market, and they're very, very heavily exposed to real estate in Australia. Have they come out with any thoughts about negative gearing and the desirability of changing it?
Yes, well the Australian banks in mid-2015 were actually in favour of reform. Three of the major banks, the CBA, the ANZ and Westpac, all suggested that property tax lurks, whether they be negative gearing or capital gains tax concessions, should be reviewed, and that they don't make a whole lot of sense anymore, and that they are too generous. But since Labor's come out with a policy, they've been curiously quiet. We haven't heard anything from the banks, anything much at all, either for or against Labor's policy. They've really just sat on the sidelines.
It's a little bit old now, but a few years ago we had the Henry Tax Review, which did make some recommendations about negative gearing. And beyond that, do we have anything out of either the RBA or Treasury about what they see as inherent problems with or reasons for keeping as is negative gearing?
Well, the Henry Tax Review definitely wants more neutral treatment and less generous treatment for not just negative gearing but all investments. It wants all types of investment effectively treated the same way, and also it to be made slightly less generous, which is sensible. I mean, one of the problems at the moment is that if you're an older person, for example, and you're trying to put away money for retirement, or you want to get an income from your investment, there's a bit of an issue at the moment whereby if you put your money in the bank, you get not a whole lot of interest because interest rates are so low, but also you get taxed at your marginal tax rate. So putting your money in the bank, which is a safe thing to do and also what a lot of people would like to do if they could, you actually get penalised for that because you get negative returns after tax. So as a result, the fact that deposits are taxed so heavily automatically draws people into higher yielding investments, investments which they perceive as safe, which residential property is relative to bank deposits. So the Henry Tax Review wants more neutral treatment between different classes of investment so that investment allocation isn't skewed towards one particular class like it is at the moment with respect to property. Now, the Australian Treasury has been fairly quiet on the issue. They have mentioned that the capital gains tax discount does flow to the highest income earners, and they have suggested that it is perhaps a little bit too generous. They don't see negative gearing as a problem so much. They see your capital gains tax discount as a problem which makes negative gearing more attractive. The Reserve Bank has been a little bit more blunt, and they've said that that Australia's system of property concessions, or tax concessions if you want to call them that, has promoted more speculative investment than would be the case otherwise, and they have tentatively called for review, although the Reserve Bank never comes out too strongly on anything. So they have also called for review. We've also had the head of the Audit Commission, Tony Shepherd, has called for review previously, and as has the Financial System Inquiry head, David Murray. So there does seem to be some fairly broad-based consensus that these concessions do need to be reviewed and potentially wound back.
Have you seen any argument put forward by either the government or the real estate lobby which has made you think, yeah, we need to be careful about that if we are to make any changes to negative gearing? Do any of their arguments have any substance at all?
No, I don't think they do. The property lobby's main complaint has been that it would push up rents, which is nonsensical. They've also perversely tried to argue that it would, in some instances, reduce supply, which, again, is nonsensical. They've also run the government's line negative gearing primarily benefits those on lower to middle incomes, which is a myth, and that removing negative gearing on established dwellings would harm ordinary mums and dads and make it harder to save for retirement, etc. But of course, what's lost in that is the fact that the best way to help people with their retirement is to make sure they don't have to dedicate a lifetime's earnings in order to buy a house paying off interest. So if you want to improve people's lot in retirement, ensure that their houses are more affordable so that they don't have to dedicate so much of their lifetime's earnings on mortgage repayments. And that's been completely lost. It's for self-interested reasons. They want to keep the property party going. Real estate agents like to collect their fat checks. The development lobby, so the Housing Industry Association, the Masters Builders, have got a lot of members who've got big land banks. They don't want to see values drop at all because that'll endanger those land banks. So really, it's it's about maintaining the status quo and keeping the debt pumping into the housing market and keeping the party going for as long as possible.
Which brings us to the question of how long the party can keep going. If the Liberals were to win the next federal election and negative gearing was to be left as is, unchanged, do you think Australia can continue to experience the house price growth that it's seen, particularly in Sydney and Melbourne? And how likely do you think it is that we would still see a softening in house prices anyway?
I think the housing market is sort of into its last puff. You know, it is approaching the end of the boom. And we're already seeing that on a number of fronts. There's been a whole bunch of warnings about apartment overbuilds and apartment prices facing catastrophe. That's come from a number of quarters. On top of that, the dwelling approvals peaked in March last year, which means that by the second half of this year, we're likely to get a downturn in housing construction, which is the major supports for the economy. At the same time, we've got Australian house prices and house prices in Sydney and Melbourne in particular at the highest ever levels versus incomes, GDP, rents. We've got Australian mortgage debt and household debt at its highest level in history. And there isn't that much more downside in mortgage rates, I don't believe. The RBA could potentially cut rates by another 1.25%, maybe 1.5% if they're lucky. They have to maintain some sort of positive yield in order to fund the current account. But as we know, the bank's cost of funding is rising and they are likely to hold on to a significant proportion of those rate cuts. So there isn't a whole lot more downside in mortgage rates. So I think we are approaching the end of the cycle. It's starting to run out of puff. There aren't that many more people who can afford to pay these ridiculous prices that can come in, especially in light of the macroprudential tightening.
And how is that likely to shape the attractiveness of negative gearing as an investment strategy moving forward?
Yeah, negative gearing is one of those tax things whereby it only makes sense when you've got a rising housing market. Again, the number of negative gearing along with the capital gains tax discount is to effectively pay your investment a dividend in the hope that it eventually rewards you with significant capital growth. So you're effectively holding a negative carry trade. You're paying money each week holding your investment. Sure, you're getting a chunk of that back, offsetting against your wages and salary earnings, but you're still paying your investment and income. And the whole idea about it is to do that, but if you get very high capital growth, which we've seen over really, 15-plus year period, if you average it out, then it's very attractive because you get the tax gains and then you only pay, reduced capital gains on any profit. But if we have a situation where house prices stop rising or start to fall, which I think is pretty likely at some point in the near future, then negative gearing loses its appeal, especially in the current environment where you have zero rental growth, which for the first time in recorded history, rents have not increased nationally in the past 12 months, which is unheard of. They generally rise a little bit at least. So in the absence of rental growth and in the absence of capital growth, and with prices stabilising and falling, it doesn't make a whole lot of sense. And it does mean that, we are likely at some point to see a whole bunch of investors saying, look, this is too hard. I'm going to cut my losses and run. And that is one of the problems with the whole negative gearing and capital gains tax discount. It does make the housing market more volatile. It encourages people to pile in as prices are rising in order to get both the tax benefits but also to get the big capital gain. But when the market turns, it does create the potential for people to rush for the exits as they get sick of paying their property a dividend in the hope for no capital growth, or in the worst case, if they lose their job and they're stuck with a loss-making investment, they have to bail and sell.
From there, do we have any gauge of public sentiment and also investor sentiment about how they would view any changes to the current negative gearing regime and, more broadly, how they view the prospect of either rising property prices or possibly even a real estate downturn?
Not a survey of property investors per se. There was a essential poll that was released earlier this week, which gauged overall Australians' perspectives on house prices. So not necessarily negative gearing, but they actually showed that a small majority of Australians would rather see house prices fall than rise. So I think that, you know, there is an appetite. I think most people realise that, look, this has gone too far. We've got a situation whereby our children can't buy homes. You know, they're effectively getting priced out of the country, and that it's not good for the economy. It's not really good for anybody in the long term. So I think it is starting to show through, and it is unusual to see a poll showing that the majority of Australians actually want to see prices fall. Not drastically, but they'd rather see them fall than rise. So I think that is a slight shift. I'm not aware of a specific poll of property investors. I'm sure most of them would prefer not to see negative gearing removed.
I've recently had it put to me by a financial advisor who's a friend and who knows my views on negative gearing, but he's put it to me that for most of his clients, and he advises clients to negatively gear in real estate, he believes that for most of his clients, there is no other alternative. They're not inclined to leave their money in a bank. They don't understand more complex investments, whereas they do have some sort of familiarity, at least, with the idea of bricks and mortar and being able to have a physical asset and at the same time being able to write off their tax to it. How do you respond to that sort of suggestion?
Yeah, unfortunately, if people see that they've really only got three choices. They've got, you buy Australian equities, you put your money in the bank, or you buy a property. And shares are obviously seen as being very, very volatile and unstable, especially after the events like the GFC. And with financial repression, with interest rates so low and tax rates on savings so high, it doesn't make sense to put your money in the bank. So I think some of them don't really see that they've got much choice, and they see that property prices have been rising so strongly and everyone else is getting rich around them, so why not me? As a result, they're leveraging themselves up and buying investment properties because that's what everyone else is doing. That's why, as of 2013, we had 2 million property investors. About 15% of taxpayers were property investors. I'm sure that number has increased since then.
David, coming back to you to look at the politics of dealing with 2 million investment property owners and the electoral clout they may have. Labor has made a break from a generation's worth of bipartisanship on negative gearing. The current Turnbull government has so far made a fair mess of its response to the idea of negative gearing change, along with its floating and rejecting a range of other tax proposals. From here, do you think the idea to limit negative gearing will cost Labor any chance of winning the upcoming federal election, or do you think the Liberals are taking the negatives a gear too far?
Yes, I think Labor can get up at this election, and in no small measure because of the bungling around negative gearing that the government has managed. I mean, basically, you clearly have a heavily divided coalition between a ruling clique who are small liberals, at least in theory, and the rump and backbench, which are real troglodytes, social conservatives, rent seekers, you know, kind of the angry white men of politics that want to protect, you know, an old regime, and, you know, skeptics on climate change to boot. And, you know, it's pretty obvious in everything that they do that there's this terrible schism in the party, and it has taken what was a very popular Prime Minister in Malcolm Turnbull, who is the small L Liberal and, you know, is on the record in favour of reforms, you know, including to negative gearing, and it's turned him into a hollow vessel that echoes their views instead of what made him so popular, which was that he was a rational, centrist, reforming Prime Minister. So the first point, I think, in the election is that his credibility is going to become a major question. The second point is, as I mentioned in the recent podcast, is that I think the polity understands that the Australian economy is not what it once was. Nobody's had a pay rise in a long time. As Leif pointed out on the blog just yesterday, GDP per capita growth is at the same level we saw in the early 80s. Like, it's disastrously bad. And after decades of prosperity, that people really feel that just in their day-to-day activity. They realize that their standard of living is falling, and so they want a plan for things to improve. And that is a space in the center of the polity that requires policy leadership. And because the Liberal Party, the ruling coalition, have been so divided on this issue, which is so central to reform, structural reform of the economy that would constitute that plan, they've vacated that space completely to Labor. So, you know, Labor has got a real handicap in Bill Shorten. He's not very popular. They've got a great treasurer, though, who can maybe offset that. But if they can constitute this plan around negative gearing and sell it to the nation as the plan that can fix things, then I think they've got a real shot of winning the election, even though the Liberal Party will embark on the mother of all fear campaigns about house price crashes and economic wipeouts and what have you. Because the more they do that, the less credible Malcolm Turnbull looks, because he is there. Or he is popular because he's seen as this centrist, rational policymaker. So the more fear campaign he spews, the less people are going to trust him. So he's stuck in a bit of a doom loop, which I think opens the space for Labor Party to lead this to an election victory if they can execute properly.
Leif Van Onselen, Dave Llewellyn-Smith, thanks very much for your time. You've been listening to part two of Macro Business Radio podcast, a discussion with Leif Van Onselen and Dave Llewellyn-Smith about negative gearing and reform.